You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the When It Was Cool Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Carl Stern. Thank you very much for joining me. This show is produced and distributed by WhenItWasCool.com and appearing at WrestlingObserver.com and Figure4Online.com. Thank you very much for joining me. We talk classic wrestling here. We talk pro wrestling history, and I do so with a rotation of themes for each show. So every week we have a little bit of a different theme that rotates around so things don't get boring, things don't get stagnant. And on this week's show, we are back around to the GKT tournament, the greatest kayfabe tournament. This was a 64-man fantasy tournament where you, the listener, vote for the winner. Now, that's obviously the game part's just a backdrop to talk about pro wrestling history, talk about two great classic wrestling stars. It's also an opportunity, I hope you will see it as this, as a way to look at what made us wrestling fans to begin with. We didn't become wrestling fans because of star ratings or the Monday night and Wednesday night and Friday night TV ratings, which are talked about at length and more. Nobody become a fan because some show did a 1.5 versus another doing a 1.4 and people got together on the internet and argued about it. No, people like pro wrestling because it is dramatic athletic entertainment. And it's been that way since the middle 1800s. Two people get together, they have a match most of the time. It's predetermined who's going to win, who's going to lose, but they put on an athletic contest. No different than they do in the movies all the time and TV all the time, except professional wrestlers are the best in the world at it because that is what they do. So I've taken 62 of the best wrestlers, the most interesting wrestlers of all time, put them in this tournament, and on Twitter, you can vote for who wins. Every week before I drop this show, people can go to at WIWC Network. That's at WIWC Network. If you can't remember that, it's on the front page of WhenItWasCool.com, and you vote for who you think will win. That's when I post the match. And this time we have two contemporaries. In fact, this is one of the rare matches in the tournament so far where we've seen the match take place in the real world. In fact, these two wrestlers have wrestled, as best as I can find, six times. I expected they would have wrestled more, but according to cagematch.net, they've wrestled six times. This is Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Eddie Guerrero. And it's very interesting because these are two very different types of wrestlers. Stone Cold Steve Austin is one of the greatest characters of all time. Eddie Guerrero, a great character himself, but one of the greatest in-ring wrestlers of all time. Coming up on January 1st, 2023, I'm going to be dropping a list at WhenItWasCool.com called the 201 Greatest Pro Wrestlers of All Time list. And what I've done is taken various rankings from, you know, media sources, wrestling historians, and averaged them together to see if I can find a cumulative consensus on who the greatest wrestlers of all time were. I take things like, you know, for many years, we've seen books, you know, the top 50 wrestlers of all time, the top 100 wrestlers of all time. We've seen, you know, Sports Illustrated did a 100 greatest wrestlers of all time. It's a pretty terrible list, but it's one nevertheless. Various websites have done this. Other wrestling historians have done this. In fact, some wrestling history websites even got several historians to turn in their judgments upon who the top 100 wrestlers are of all time, and they averaged those together. I'm going to be using all those lists. Pro Wrestling Illustrated has done their top 500 wrestlers of the year for, you know, a couple decades now, going back into the 1990s. And so we know what those are each year, and I've done a cumulative ranking of those. Wrestler of the Year for Observer and other publications. And I took all those together, gave them point values, ranked them, averaged them to come up with a consensus of who are the 201 greatest pro wrestlers of all time. And you know Steve Austin and Eddie Guerrero both have got to be on that list. In fact, as I'm sure most of you suspect, Steve Austin's probably going to be pretty high on that list. Now, in-ring worker, Steve Austin was a really good in-ring worker. I mean, he was one of the better brawlers and mat, you know, technicians of all time. But, you know, he wasn't in that upper level elite of, like, you know, the Billy Robinsons or the Lou Thesz or something like that when it comes to, you know, his in-ring mat work. But he had one of the greatest characters ever. In fact, I mean, Steve Austin's easily in the top 10. Probably the top five, right? We'll find out January 1st. Well, Eddie Guerrero's in there as well. A great character, especially as it evolved in WWE. A tremendous in-ring worker from a second generation family member. His father was Gory Guerrero, a legend down in Mexico. His brothers, Hector, Chavo, and Armando were great wrestlers themselves. He had an uncle, Javier Lanas, who was also a wrestler. Chavo Guerrero, who's a nephew. I mean, he comes from a large, very good wrestling family. There's not a bad wrestler among that whole group I just named. And Eddie Guerrero may very well have been the best of all of them. Probably was the best of all of them. And he excelled in ECW, WCW, AAA, WWE, everywhere he went. I won't say he overachieved because, you know, he was great. But for a smaller Latino wrestler in a business run by people who didn't necessarily see smaller Latino wrestlers as the face of the company, as top main event stars, he did overachieve in that way. But he just was too talented to keep down. Literally, an example of the cream rising to the top was Eddie Guerrero. Steve Austin was just a fountain of charisma. When I saw Steve Austin's, I saw both these men's entire career from the first time they ever worked until the last time they ever worked, at least so far, with in the case of Steve Austin. And I remember seeing, I mean, I was getting world-class television as Steve Austin, you know, came on as a student of Chris Adams. He had graduated from Chris Adams Wrestling School, did the angle with Chris Adams there in World Class. You know, when Jerry Jarrett buys the promotion, it evolves into USWA. You know, Steve Austin's there. He's in the Memphis end of things. Event, you know, you saw stardom in him from the get-go. He was so clearly at a better level than any of the other young guys who were debuting back then. I mean, he clearly had something. He was tall, athletic, charismatic. He had, at that time, the long blonde hair. He just looked, you knew this was going to be your, quote, next Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, that type of wrestler. It just depended on how it shook out. And interestingly enough, where it really shook out for him, he was none of those. He was a great, very, in a lot of ways, kind of original character. There were certainly many characters like him doing the badass gimmick, but he took it to a different level and really tapped into something in the popular culture where, you know, who doesn't, you know, want to flip off their boss and you know, stand up for the working man, stand up for the blue collar man. You know, the whole beer drinking gimmick and the tough as nails. He, you know, had the shaved head and the goatee look, which became a whole look there in the 1990s, wearing black, just being tough. Steve Austin's gimmick was, I'm tough and I'm not taking no crap. And it so worked. I mean, it struck a chord, not just in pro wrestling with popular culture. Austin 316 shirts were everywhere. He's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, merchandise mover in the history of pro wrestling. So we got a real interesting matchup here for two contemporaries who worked two different styles of wrestling. But you, the listener, voted. You went to at WIWC Network on Twitter. If you don't remember that, again, get it off the front page of whenitwascool.com. All of our social media is there. And you voted, and you said 78% to 23%, the winner of the match was Steve Austin. And that's not surprising. Steve Austin was the bigger star of the two. And we have real-world examples of what this match would have been like. I was surprised to realize these two have only met six times, apparently. That's what cagematch.net has listed. Six times, all in WWE between over a two-year period, a little less than a two-year period, as a matter of fact. That seems wrong. Like, you would expect it would be more than that, but that's not what it is, and so it's very interesting. And the results of those matches go along and confirm with the results of our poll. Steve Austin won all six of those matches. The first time they met was in a eight-person tag team match, November the 13th, 2000, on WWF Raw is War. And this came from the Nationwide Arena in Columbus, Ohio. Eddie Guerrero came in as part of a group that defected from WCW, which was, you know, just imploding at this point in time. Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, and Perry Saturn, along with Eddie Guerrero, came in and formed a group, a little stable called the Radicals. And they were defeated on this night by a four-person team of Steve Austin, The Rock, how's that for some star power for you, Billy Gunn, who's still wrestling to this day in AEW, and China as their fourth person member. So, you know, I remember back to this time period, and, you know, Eddie Guerrero got hurt very quickly, right into the WWE, doing that frog splash where he dislocated his elbow. And, you know, he was coming off a long string of personal problems. He had had a bad car wreck in WCW. He was really struggling with some personal demons. But when he finally got all that worked out, he so excelled. I mean, he so started really living up to his full potential once he got physically and mentally where he needed to be. And sadly, of course, Eddie Guerrero died at a very young age of a heart attack. Was that related to his past substance abuse issues? Well, you know, who knows? I'm not a doctor, but I do know this. 38 years old is a tragedy for somebody as good as Eddie Guerrero was to pass away. What did Eddie Guerrero's future have? You realize Eddie Guerrero, when he died, was years younger than AJ Styles. I mean, he had still quite a bit left. Now, I presume his career had peaked. Like, I presume. But you can never know, right? I mean, the right idea comes along, the right circumstance comes along, and maybe they do even more if he could stay injury-free or whatever. But Eddie Guerrero was just so, so good. The next time they met was the next night at a SmackDown taping, November the 14th in the year 2000. Steve Austin has a singles match with Eddie Guerrero at the field house in Indianapolis, Indiana. And is this the one he got hurt in? I don't remember exactly which match Eddie Guerrero got his injury in. I'll see if see if maybe I can look that up real quick, because I'm wondering if it was this, because I know it was very, very early into his run in WWF. Let's see here. The Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, and Perry Saturn debuted in the WWF on January 31st, 2000, on an episode of Raw's War. The Radicals, interfering in a match involving the New Age Outlaws, established themselves as babyfaces. During his first match with WWF, a tag team match with Perry Saturn against the New Age Outlaws, Guerrero performed a frog splash off the top rope and dislocated his elbow. So this was actually before that. This was actually several months, like 11 months before. So this was after the injury that the Radicals lose this tag team match to Billy Gunn, China, and Steve Austin and The Rock. The next night, Austin beats Eddie Guerrero in, ironically enough, 3 minutes, 16 seconds. Yes, 3:16, Austin beats Eddie Guerrero. The next time they wrestle is going to be 2 years later, about a year and a half later. Yeah, that seems tragic, really. You know, I would have liked to have seen a lot more between these two. May the 25th of the year 2002 at a Raw house show in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, Steve Austin beats Eddie Guerrero. They wrestle again the next day at a house show in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada, where Steve Austin beats Eddie Guerrero again, presumably in probably the same match. They don't wrestle again it's about a week later, June the 2nd of 2002, again at a house show. Steve Austin beats Eddie Guerrero in New Orleans, Louisiana, at the arena. And just a few days later, at another. So the majority of their matches were house show matches. Again, just a couple days later, June 7th, 2002. So, wow, over 20 years ago was the last time Steve Austin took on Eddie Guerrero, and he beats him in a house show at the Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky. So 6 times they wrestled, 6 times Steve Austin is the winner, and the majority of those, all but 2, are on house shows. So they only had 2 televised matches. That seems crazy. As successful as the two of them were, that they didn't face off more than that. So I think this result is pretty much right. I wonder if there was something like, did Steve Austin have some sort of, you know, Steve Austin could be finicky about who he worked with. I mean, is well known. He didn't like Jeff Jarrett, so he didn't work with Jeff Jarrett. And there have been some insinuation of other cases where Steve Austin, you know, put the nicks on working with other people. I wonder if Eddie Guerrero was one of those people for some reason. If he had some sort of reason for not wanting to work, or if it just was happenstance. Because Eddie Guerrero was in WWE. I think one thing we have to remember too is that, you know, Eddie Guerrero was gone for several months from WWE as well. On November 9th, 2001, he was arrested for drunk driving, and WWE released him for several months at that point in time, where he worked indie shows and a little bit in New Japan before returning to WWE again in April of 2002. So that may have something to do with it. In early 2001, Eddie Guerrero Eddie was just, you know, right under what Steve Austin was doing for a lot of time. Seems like maybe that was the point of why there's so little between the two. Also, of course, you know, we're talking about Raw, SmackDown having 2 separate rosters for a lot of time, so they just missed each other a lot. Just find it very, very baffling. In early 2001, Eddie Guerrero feuded with Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, and X-Pac over the Intercontinental Championship. At No Way Out, the 4 men faced each other in a fatal 4-way match, which Chris Jericho won. Guerrero focused on the European Championship, feuding with the champion Test, defeating him at WrestleMania 17 to win his 2nd European Championship. In April, the Radicals feuded with Test and his partners. Eddie Guerrero eventually left the Radicals, siding with the Hardy Boys and Lita. At this point, Eddie Guerrero developed an addiction to pain medication stemming from his 1999 car accident. That was the one I was talking about there in WCW. Look, he almost died in that wreck. At that time period, I was doing some independent wrestling shows, and we were using Hector Guerrero some. And you know, I remember talking about that. People were very concerned that Eddie darn near died in that wreck. In May of 2001, he was sent to rehab, and he missed the entire Invasion storyline, which featured his former fellow WCW wrestlers. To explain his absence, a storyline was created where Eddie Guerrero was injured by Albert in a match, Matt Bloom. Then came the drunk driving arrest, and once he returned to WWF, April 1st, 2002, he appeared on an episode of Raw, attacked Rob Van Dam, feuded with Rob Van Dam, beating him for his second Intercontinental Championship at Backlash. After retaining the title against Van Dam at Insurrection and Judgment Day, he finally lost the title to Van Dam, May 27th episode of Raw, in a ladder match. Then he feuded with Steve Austin. So you say he feuded with Steve Austin, you say, and they had only six matches ever. Well, here's what happened. Eddie Guerrero then feuded with Stone Cold Steve Austin, but Austin left WWE before a match could take place. Chris Benoit returned to WWE the night Guerrero lost the title and reunited with him. Guerrero and Benoit feuded with Ric Flair for a while, and Guerrero lost a match to Flair at King of the Ring. On August 1st, 2002, Guerrero and Benoit moved to SmackDown, and Guerrero feuded with Edge, to whom he lost at SummerSlam. Guerrero continued to feud with Edge, whom he defeated in Unforgiven. Then they had a no-DQ match 4 days later at Unforgiven on SmackDown, which Edge won, and that ended the rivalry. And then he transitions from there into the Los Guerreros tag team with Chavo Jr. So, again, it was just timing issues between the two. Now, I was a big fan of Eddie Guerrero, to no question about it. Again, when I was promoting indie shows, we used Hector. Armando was largely out of wrestling at that point in time, I think living in California. Chavo Sr. was out of wrestling, of course. He would come back to WWF. Hector was living somewhere in Alabama. Like, I know he lived in Florida for a while as well, but he lived here for a little while and worked a lot of independent shows around here. And so, had the opportunity to use him. And Hector was a very, very good, very good athlete, very good pro. I always loved the Lucha Libre style. I always liked it when it kind of showed up in America. You know, back as I grew up watching wrestling in the territorial era and stuff, it was always interesting to see people who had different styles, like the European wrestlers, people like Tony Charles and Les Thornton. And you would see they would come in and use this European style, which I always found very interesting. You know, Stephen Regal, when he first came, first rose to prominence in WCW, you know, he used that style. It was much more technical, had all kinds of different, you know, technical wrestling moves you didn't get to see a lot. Well, I love the Lucha Libre stuff because it was so dynamic, so high-flying, so fast-paced. And, I think the Guerreros and Rey Mysterio Jr. definitely were the ones that did it the best, Americanized, worked that style in there. Now, Steve Austin, I mean, he was one of my favorites. I always liked the tough guy wrestlers were always my favorites. The Steve Dr. Death Williams, Terry Gordy, Big Van Vader. I was a huge fan of Big Van Vader. Bam Bam Bigelow, Road Warriors. Oh, Road Warriors were probably one of my first favorite tag team acts. I always loved that style, those guys. So it's no surprised that I was a big fan of Steve Austin. His character was just absolutely tremendous, and it really struck a pop culture chord in the 1990s. The 1990s were interesting. A lot of people look back nostalgically now at the 1990s and think about things like Nickelodeon and neon colors, and, you know, comic books were terrible and baseball cards collapsed, and, you know, but you had this very different look of popular culture in the 1990s versus what it had been in the 1980s. But there was also an undertone in the 1990s of a very, very disenchanted sort of theme sort of ran under stuff. It was the anti-hero, Punisher in the comic books, Steve Austin in wrestling. It was the age where just underneath the surface there was something a little darker. Venom in the comic books was another one. So you think about that, and Steve Austin definitely tapped into that, probably better than anybody did, of this just simmering sort of tension. And it was a real departure from what he had previously been. Again, if you watch early Steve Austin, I mean, even in WCW with Brian Pillman as the Hollywood Blondes, you think it looks like Steve Austin's headed more in the direction of a Ric Flair or something like that than what he ended up being, as his character became, you know, really totally different. Not only did he not have flowing blonde hair anymore, he shaved his head. Not only was he clean shaven, you know, doing the pretty boy act with the, you know, Steve Austin always had those glittery robes and stuff, much like Ric Flair did in his WCW run. You know, he changed to black boots, black trunks, and a black vest. And it's a great thing that he did, because otherwise, while I think he would have been successful, he wouldn't have been as successful. Of course, he had the thinning hair problem, too. At some point in time, that would have had to have been addressed some way or another. But the way he did it really tapped into popular culture. I mean, just look at the late 1990s. Goldberg's another example. Shaved head, goatee, that was the look. And Steve Austin tapped into that really before anybody did, you know. And so he really spoke to that whole generation. And, you know, he was always, I won't say injury prone, but he definitely had his struggle with injuries. And that's what ended his career so prematurely, really. And he had to slow down so much. Obviously, the very bad neck injury, but clearly he had bad knees and a multitude of other injuries along the way. I think really truncated what we could have seen out of Steve Austin. He also was super hyper focused on his career. He was very much creative driven, and that oftentimes is what a superstar needs. I mean, you know, Hulk Hogan didn't get to be Hulk Hogan by, you know, sitting around agreeing to put everybody over. Yeah, that gives you the reputation of being hard to get along with, difficult to deal with, but it also makes you a superstar if you can pull it off and you do it well. And Steve Austin, you know, was somewhat difficult to deal with, it appears, behind the scenes. I mean, again, there was only certain things he was going to do. He walked out on the company. Very famously, they used one of his best friends in the business, Jim Ross, to cut a very negative promo on Steve Austin. And you could see, I mean, he was oftentimes very much in his own head too much. A lot of that's necessary to be a superstar, but it can also hinder you. But he, you know, Eddie Guerrero, I think, could have accomplished more than he did had he not had the setbacks he had. But Steve Austin, really, what more could he accomplish? I mean, he was one of the biggest stars ever in the pro wrestling business. Had he remained healthy, I do wonder what more he could have done. How much, or would he just have become a parody of himself? Because he kind of, at a certain point, started to be. I mean, the whole heel turn, his interactions with Kurt Angle, while all that was very entertaining, the white chants definitely were something that sort of started turning him really from being this super cool character to, that could have easily flipped into making him a little too much comedy. And so maybe Steve Austin actually hit it all just about right. If I were watching these two matched up in their peaks, in their primes, I think this would have been one absolutely tremendous heck of a match. Eddie Guerrero could have pulled off the high flying and so much of the mat work stuff. Steve Austin could pull off the brawling. Eddie Guerrero was a super bump taker. I mean, both had a lot of fire, and that's something that's, As I go on and become a longer and longer fan of pro wrestling, and I see a lot of matches, especially as we get more modern, that lack that fire, have replaced that fire with, you know, acrobatics and quick spots. And I'm not being negative and condemning that. I understand that is the style of the day, and that's fine. Whatever works, but I notice it is kind of that fire is a lost art, and selling is not just, you know, going down for punches and acting like you're hurt from a big move and taking the time to get the audience emotionally invested. Selling is also the fire. Selling the emotion is not just selling something physical. It's also selling the emotion of what's happening. Am I making a comeback? Is it taking all my energy, all my mental focus? You know, the hulking up type stuff. Tommy Wildfire Rich, I mean, Ricky Morton, oh my gosh, you know, fire in his eyes for sure, making the big comeback. It's all I can do to stay in this, but I'm going to fight to my last breath, and that being appreciated by the crowd, that is, in a lot of ways, kind of a little bit of a lost art. And both Steve Austin and Eddie Guerrero had that. I mean, good grief, think back to that Steve Austin-Bret Hart match at WrestleMania that was so famous, the passing out in the sharpshooter. That's what I'm talking about. You know, you obviously know that this is scripted. You know it's worked. But by God, you believe it in the moment. And both these wrestlers were so very good at it. To me, Eddie Guerrero is a great example of something that is often criticized today, where you have lots of wrestlers doing lots of high-flying, even Lucha Libre-inspired moves that work, but Eddie Guerrero was so good at selling the aspect of it, selling the fire, selling the quick high-flying stuff, selling the high-spot oriented wrestling, but at the same time, being able to do the quick stuff. Whereas today, in a lot of situations, you just get move without the drama in there. It's the dance between the notes. And I've used this analogy before. The one of the greatest, if not the greatest drummer of all time, Neil Peart, late in his career before his death, he went to train with another drummer, an older jazz drummer named Freddie Gruber, who taught him not how to play drums, because obviously he was talking to one of the greatest drummers that ever lived and ever will live. But he taught him that the drama between the notes brings entertainment, brings a drama, a flair to what you're doing. And he said he learned so much from that. And Eddie Guerrero and Steve Austin both had that drama between the notes. And that is why they were a great matchup for the GKT. I won't say it was a mismatch, and I won't say it was something was a foregone conclusion, but it kind of was. But both these names needed to be here. Steve Austin will now continue to the next round as we say goodbye to Eddie Guerrero in the GKT. And for the next round matchup and to see what happens, you're going to have to stick around to for When It Was Cool and follow us on Twitter. I will announce who Steve Austin will be facing in the next round on our Twitter account. So there is your prodding to go to the front page of whenitwascool.com. Follow us on Twitter. Hope you'll follow us on all of our social media accounts. And I hope you'll follow all of our free podcasts. Listen, whatever podcast app you're using, if it's iTunes, if it's Apple, if it's Amazon, Spotify, wherever, go to that app. In the search engine, just type the words When It Was Cool. That should pull up the When It Was Cool Retro Pop Culture Podcast, When It Was Cool Dark, and When It Was Cool Wrestling. And subscribe to all three. Those are our three free shows. And if you like what we do, and I hope you will, we've got an archive of over 2,000 shows waiting for you at whenitwascool.com as a Patreon supporter. We don't just do here's once a month, I'm going to throw you a free show. No, we do a show almost every single day on our Patreon feed involving, a large part of it, professional wrestling history. Others is retro pop culture. If you like pro wrestling history, you probably like a lot of the other stuff we talk about too, which is retro TV, movies, sports, popular culture in general. Come check us out. Give us a try. WhenItWasCool.com. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you here again soon with another show.
When It Was Cool is your home for retro pop culture fun. We feature hundreds of podcasts on classic TV shows, movies, retro sports, toys, history, music, wrestling, and more. Tons of free podcasts. And hit any Patreon button for a deeper dive into our premium shows. WhenItWasCool.com. Fun and friendly.